Hey everyone, I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Fostering Forward with Nick and Lo.
A podcast hosted by two foster moms who believe in fostering to reunify,
fostering the whole family,
fostering change,
and most importantly, fostering growth in yourself.
Our hope is that this podcast will be an invitation for you to join us in radical foster parenting.
Let's get started. So today we're going to be talking about who can foster and how to start the process and get approved, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you some questions and we'll kind of figure out who can and who can't.
Go ask me.
Okay. Can you foster if you're single?
Hells yeah. I did it.
What if you have a DUI?
Yeah, I know, not from my own experience, but from experience that you can.
Okay. But what if you have a roommate?
Okay, if your roommate is a child molester, then no. But if your roommate can pass a BCI and FBI background check, then yes. I had a bomb-ass roommate for about a year in between fostering as a single parent and my co-parent moving in with us. And it was great. And my roommate was really helpful.
That's awesome. So this one, I actually feel some type of way about because I waited until I wasn't doing this. But what if you rent your home?
You can definitely foster if you rent. I think your house is really cute, though, but I'm sad for you that you waited until you bought it.
Thank you. I do love my home. But yeah, that was like a big thing is Adam and I felt like we needed to wait until we purchased our first home to be taken seriously, which isn't true.
No, they somehow took me seriously. I will say, too, the only thing with that, and I think you guys lucked out on this, is when you're buying a home, it does make it a little harder when you have an active case. So my oldest was in foster care with me when I bought and closed on my home, our home that we live in now. Mm-hmm. And it was just a bit of a pain in the ass to like get the safety stuff. Like, you know, you're already doing home stuff and mortgage stuff. And then you also have to do like foster care stuff. So it was just stressful. But I think, I mean, I've only bought one home, but I'm guessing home buying is always shitty in a bad time.
I think so. And I also know that people move also. And so like, you know, when you're moving, you would have to do that as well. Okay. So what if you have biological kids?
I don't know, bitch. You tell me.
Well, I think that your answer should just be yes. But yeah, you can, obviously.
Okay, so what if they're really young biological kids? Because I know a lot of people say this to me. They're like, well, we are pregnant or we just had a baby and can we still be foster parents?
I have young biological kids. My youngest is currently 2. And we've actually, at this point, we've taken placements of all ages. But right now, our placements are older. I mean, specifically teenagers. I think that though there are certain obstacles and that's something you have to do regardless, it's actually been a really great experience for us. And I don't think I would go back.
So you can foster if you have really young biological kids and you can even foster older kids or teens. It doesn't have to just be little ones.
You can do it and you may even like it.
Yeah. And you can double up infants. I don't want to make it like
we've double upped infants. I mean, our first placement was the same age as my youngest.
Yeah, Nicole just hated it.
It was rough. It definitely was. I mean, she was
having, it wasn't rough, but the experience of two
absolutely babies. Having, I think they were 3 months apart. So essentially two 18 month olds who were at like very different places developmentally, but still both very, very needy, was a lot. But yeah, so I think that there is even a chance that you would like it. Lauren, I don't know if I can afford it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so literally, this is how you afford to be a foster parent. Don't be so broke that you can't pay your own bills. That's literally it. So like when I got approved, I didn't have any other kids at the home at the time. And I literally had to just give them my checking account statement. And it had to show that I hadn't overdrawn my account in 3 months consecutively.
So, you have to do that.
Yeah, that was it though. It was literally like, okay, have you bounced your account in 3 months? No. Sweet. And then I wrote out my little budget, like how much I paid for my bills and rent and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was me reporting it. Like, I mean, obviously I told the truth, but like I could have totally like just fudged it. And it was literally the form. And that was it. That was literally it. So as long as you are covering your own expenses completely, and you know, I mean, I personally would recommend like maybe being in a place where you're putting away like a couple hundred a month. Like at the time, like I was younger and like had just started my real girl, big girl job. So I was saving, but I didn't have a ton of savings. But I had a, you know, like a couple grand in my emergency fund, because I'm a super, like, I'm a saving type of person. I like to save. And so I do recommend a little bit of savings. But yeah, as long as you're covering your bills and you're maybe saving, you know, at least you're not living paycheck to paycheck for yourself, then you can afford it.
Yeah, I think that so we did not have to turn in anything banking, but we did have to like give our income and then give copies of our utility bills. And then we had to write like our debts and our assets, and they kind of looked at it. But that was all that we had to do for that. And I personally think, you know, we are a single income family. Completely single income. I don't do nothing for money. I'm just a mooch, just a parasite. And it was definitely intimidating. Granted, like I was already raising kids on our income, and we were doing fine. But I have learned through the experience that, so specifically with our agency, so like a clothing voucher comes in the form of a gift card, and you do not get that right away. Where we had a placement on a weekday night, and he was looking to go to school the next day, but didn't have anything.
So sometimes there's some upfront expenses.
Exactly. And so, I mean, even if you're getting reimbursed, having a little bit of a cushion to cover those upfront expenses definitely takes some of the stress away. But that doesn't have to be anything crazy at all.
So you don't have to be rich. You do have to be covering your own bills and having a little cushion of nest egg for initial expenses is recommended.
Definitely, I would agree. What if I didn't parent any children before I became a foster parent? Am I still able to be one? Can I do
Yes,
it?
bitch. So I was a brand new, I was a wannabe mom, before I was a foster mom. I was a nanny. That was like the extent of my experience. And boy, did I think that that was experience more than it was. I liked being a nanny and I think I learned a lot. But back in the day, I thought that that was like the same thing and it is not. But I definitely, you know, I learned as I went. I think sometimes, I think so it brings advantages and disadvantages, just like everything. I think an advantage of not having had kids, a couple advantages of not having kids before you foster is one, your kids that are coming into care don't have to compete with other kids and like the routines that they've learned, and like just kind of the existing family structure is more flexible. And it's not like, you know, they could come into a family with kids too, and that could also be great. But I think there are some kids that it's maybe an advantage. Like my first two boys definitely did better because they were the only kids in my home. I don't know that they could have really, it would have been really hard to have them be as successful as they had been with me, with a family that had other kids. And the other kids would have had to have very specific strengths, in order to be able to be safe and do well in a home with them. And then I think on the flip side, if you've been parenting, you know, you have a system in place. And so there's definitely, you know, there's pros and cons. I had to do a lot of learning on the fly. And I think I would have had an easier time if I had parented before, for sure. But I also like, I did learn and I, you know, grew with them and it went fine. So I think it can go, I think there's going to be pros and cons either way. So if you haven't parented before, you can still totally do it. If you have parented before, you can still totally do it. And know that if you've been a parent before you're a foster parent, you're not necessarily going to be an expert. Because I think sometimes when people have had kids, it's kind of like it works against them because they think like, oh, I'm doing a great job already. It's going to be
I
just like
agree.
this.
No, I agree. So I think that a big thing that like I always remind myself is I am a better parent now than I was with my first child. So even when I had my first biological child, I had no clue what I was doing. Regardless of age, regardless of position in life, you go into it not really knowing what it's like, even if you think you do. And I do think that even though I had biological children, I didn't have to be a trauma-informed parent to parent them, which has been something that has had to be a huge shift in my parenting. Not an intimidating shift at all, just something that I had to be conscious of. We've had experience with kids who have come into our home after a disruption, where a large issue was that these families, while they were doing what they thought was best, I don't know, just didn't, weren't open to anything, anything new or any way of improving. And I mean, like, we're also like, we're big at like apologizing to our kids because like, I don't know what I'm doing all the time. I mean, we're all kind of learning together and we really enjoy talking and hearing, you know, I think that my kids have valid voices and I want to hear them. And I think that that definitely is, not to toot my own horn, but that definitely is like a advantage that we have as a home. And I've seen the effects of not having that openness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So not that older parents can't be bomb, because they totally can. And I always tell people, like, I think you need to be young at heart to be a good foster parent, not necessarily young, mm-hmm. but what about if you are young? Like, how young can you be and still foster?
If you can drink, you can be a foster parent.
Yes. If you can legally drink at a bar, you're old enough to be a foster parent. So 21. And everyone's always like, oh yeah, but nobody does it at 21. I was 21 when I first started foster parenting and I would highly recommend it. I had a lot of energy and I was raring to go. So I kind of wish I could tap into some of that 21-year-old energy now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, we started a year ago. I was 23. And I think that, I mean, I recall seeing so many people be like, oh, we're so young. Like, I don't know if we can do it. I don't know if we can take older kids. I don't know if they'll take me serious. And while I will say I was a young parent, but I had already been parenting for 7 years, we continue to educate ourselves outside of that, like, initial. So basically, I think that you can't be a treatment home in your first year.
So where you are, I mean, like, you, as far as like, are you meeting more serious needs? You're a treatment home, but you're not technically trained as a treatment home right now.
Correct. Because I don't believe that we can be.
So today we're going to be talking about who can foster and how to start the process and get approved, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you some questions and we'll kind of figure out who can and who can't.
Go ask me.
Okay. Can you foster if you're single?
Hells yeah, I did it.
What if you have a DUI?
Yeah, I know, not from my own experience, but from experience that you can.
Okay, but what if you have a roommate?
Okay, if your roommate is a child molester, then no. But if your roommate can pass a BCI and FBI background check, then yes. I had a bomb-ass roommate for about a year in between fostering as a single parent and my co-parent moving in with us. And it was great, and my roommate was really helpful.
That's awesome. So this one, I actually feel some type of way about because I waited until I wasn't doing this. But what if you rent your home?
You can definitely foster if you rent. I think your house is really cute, though, but I'm sad for you that you waited until you bought it.
Thank you. I do love my home. But yeah, that was like a big thing, is Adam and I felt like we needed to wait until we purchased our first home to be taken seriously, which isn't true.
No, they somehow took me seriously. I will say, too, the only thing with that, and I think you guys lucked out on this, is when you're buying a home, it does make it a little harder when you have an active case. So my oldest was in foster care with me when I bought and closed on my home that we live in now. Mm-hmm. And it was just a bit of a pain in the ass to, like, get the safety stuff. Like, you know, you're already doing home stuff and mortgage stuff, and then you also have to do, like, foster care stuff. So it was just stressful. But I think, I mean, I've only bought one home, but I'm guessing home buying is always shitty in a bad time.
I think so. And I also know that people move also. And so, like, you know, when you're moving, you would have to do that as well. Okay, so what if you have biological kids?
I don't know, bitch. You tell me.
Well, I think that your answer should just be yes. But yeah, you can, obviously.
Okay, so what if they're really young biological kids? Because I know a lot of people say this to me. They're like, well, we are pregnant or we just had a baby and can we still be foster parents?
I have young biological kids. My youngest is currently 2. And we've actually, at this point, we've taken placements of all ages, but right now our placements are older. I mean, specifically teenagers. I think that though there are certain obstacles, it's actually been a really great experience for us, and I don't think I would go back.
So you can foster if you have really young biological kids, and you can even foster older kids or teens. It doesn't have to just be little ones.
You can do it, and you may even like it.
Yeah. And you can double up infants. I don't want to make it like
we've double upped infants. I mean, our first placement was the same age as my youngest.
Yeah, Nicole just hated it.
It was rough. It definitely was. I mean, she was
having, it wasn't rough, but the experience of two
absolutely babies. Having, I think they were 3 months apart. So essentially two 18 month olds who were at like very different places developmentally, but still both very, very needy, was a lot. But yeah, so I think that there is even a chance that you would like it. Maybe that kind of is a bias and kind of skews things.
No, because I feel the same way as you, and I definitely did not have that experience.
But yeah, no, I think that being young can have its advantages. And I think that that is a big part of, I mean, I've heard this from our agency, when placing kids with us, a lot of our openness comes from our age and being just like aware that we don't really know what we're doing. And so we're open to learning more. And I think that, you know, when you have the wisdom, sometimes you forget that like you can teach an old dog new tricks. And so I think that being a young foster parent is cool.
Yeah. You have to be a teachable dog.
For sure.
Whether you're old or young.
Yes, exactly.
Definitely. Okay. So speaking of becoming a foster parent, let's talk about the licensure process, or okay, as Nicole would say, the licensure. Remember you're trying to say it earlier. Say it now.
Yes.
How you're doing.
Licensure.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm so proud of you.
It took some effort.
Okay. So training hours. Oh, I'm scared to say this. I feel like people that are considering it are going to be like, ew, no. Okay. So here's the thing, guys. It's like 40 to 60 hours, but don't freak out. It really goes pretty fast. It's like, it feels like a bazillion hours, but then all of a sudden you turn around and a few months have gone by and you're done.
Well, and I don't even feel, and this is like super not healthy relationship advice, so please don't take it. But our training classes were on Saturdays, and I think we only, because they were all day, I think we only had to do a month of them, maybe a little spillage. If my math is right, like a little leaked over into the next month. But Adam and I took it as a date because you get a lunch break. And so we would get a sitter for the day, which we never did. We would go to our class. We would take lunch. We would go eat it in the car together. I mean, this was even like pre-COVID. We just liked to chill in the car together. I think it was cold at the time maybe also. But we would have lunch and then we'd go back and we'd finish our classes and we would talk and we would drive home. I think that that was one of the best times that I've had because we were learning a lot and we got some time away. And really, we made some really cool relationships in those classes. A lot of the other people who were getting licensed and our instructor was really cool as well.
See, yeah, I agree. When I got certified as a single parent, it was more similar to yours. The first agency I worked with did it really quickly. So it was like marathon weekends. So I believe it was like 4 weekends, but I ended up being like 2 or 3 months for me because I missed like one of the weekends and redid it another time. Yeah. But it'd be like a marathon weekend, like all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And so it was really fast. And that included your therapeutic hours. And so you have your regular hours, which is your initial amount. And then you have like extra on top of that. And we'll talk about that in a sec. But my first agency did it quickly. And I made so many good friends. One of my friends that I made in classes was also a single foster mom at the time. And now we're both adoptive moms and she and I are still really close. And so, yeah, it was really, and yeah, you're learning a lot. You're thinking about what you're learning. And so it doesn't as long of a time as it is. And then as a couple, yeah, it was really fun. We would get childcare, like you said, and we did the same thing. We would go out to eat because this was pre-COVID. And so when my partner got certified with me, I got continuing hours and he got his initial hours and that was really fun. And we made some good friends then too. Some of which we still talk to today. And so it's not bad. It's really not. Okay. So I believe every home, speaking of treatment homes, cause I touched on that a second ago, but so there's traditional foster homes that don't have as much training and are technically only supposed to take children and babies that don't have as serious of needs. And then there's treatment foster homes that have more training hours and are supposed to be supposedly better prepared for more needs. I have some thoughts about that. I'm assuming, do you have some thoughts about that?
I do. I do have some thoughts about that, mainly because we're not a treatment home by license, but I think some of the kids in our home would technically qualify, but we do really well. being just regular foster parents. And I think the reason we do well is because...
So here that would be nuts. But yeah, so every county is different. So even though we're in the same state, Nicole's in a different county than me. And I think your county sounds like a lot more flexible than that, because I know, like, you said one of your kids is technically receiving like treatment level supports. And like here, you would have to bump your license up. Like you couldn't get that level of support.
Well, and I think that like we are only able to sustain that because we put in the effort to like continue learning. There's a lot of kids who come into care not knowing the level of care that they would need, obviously. And so if you're not prepared for that, I think that's where a lot of disruptions happen. And a lot of it is justified because, oh, well, we're not treatment level. So we couldn't help for them. Whereas I disagree. I don't think that treatment homes should exist, but that doesn't mean that I don't think they're necessary. I just think everybody should be one.
Exactly. I agree. I think everyone should get the extra hours. And I think that the hours that you get should be more tailored to the needs of the kids that you're going to be caring for and just more useful in general. But yes, I think every home should be a treatment home. And I hear that excuse also. And I don't think it's anybody's fault. I think it's the way that the system sets it up.
Definitely.
We also have really great friends that are in a similar situation in Nicole's family. A lot of people we know actually were like, they're not technically a treatment home, but they have a child in their home that they love very much who has a lot going on, and they are meeting those needs and educating themselves on the side and just doing a great job. And then they have to be like, well, you know, we're trying to level up and become a treatment home. And I feel like it kind of sucks for those parents too, because like they are already doing so much specialized care, but they don't get that recognition of like, you're a treatment level home, when really they're providing treatment level care. So I think everybody should start out as a treatment home for sure.
Definitely. Well, and I think that something to our state specifically is they adjusted the requirements. And now the requirements to be a treatment home are actually what it was just to get licensed before.
Yeah, they cut the hours in Ohio by a lot. And everyone's excited about it because I think a lot of long-term foster parents are excited about it, because to be honest, like I'm in year 5 of foster parenting.
Yes, it gets exhausting.
Yeah, I won't lie to you. The training gets exhausting after like 3 or 4 or 5 years. Like you get really sick of getting on, well, now it's Zoom, but like getting on Zoom or going to an office and getting those trainings in, especially when you have 2 kids and then 3 kids, you know, like the more kids.
For sure.
You're like, or 6, it becomes harder to get to class. And so I get why people are excited that they're cutting the hours, but I really worry. Nicole and I were not so excited because I feel like more, maybe the same level of training and more quality training is needed. But I worry that by cutting hours, we're going to see an increase in, you know, kids being disrupted and not doing well in homes. And, new people not being prepared. I just worry about the effects of cutting those hours.
Well, I think that I have the question too of if we're dropping the treatment level hours required down to what was normally just licensed, why can we not just then do everyone treatment? Do you think it's like a cost thing, like a pay thing?
Yes. somebody has to pay the trainers. No, we don't need to be cute about the financial.
Do you treatment level children receive higher per diems?
Yes.
Okay.
So your per diem is the daily amount that your child receives. It's like child, basically like the way I always phrase it, and it's not a popular way to phrase it, but I'm going to do it anyway. is like the state is basically your baby daddy when you are a foster parent. And yes. When I was single, it made more sense because people used to come at me. Actually, when I was a single foster mom, I had several ladies come at me and be like, you shouldn't call yourself a single mom because I'm a single biological mom and I only get to say that. You get money for those kids is what they said to me. And I literally turned around and was like, oh, like, I'm sorry. Does your partner not pay child support? If he doesn't, you should take him to court. And she was like, well, he does. And I was like, okay, well, you're a real mom and you get child support. So yeah, basically like your per diem is your child support from the state and then it helps you meet your kids' needs. And yeah, kids who are classified as treatment level get a higher rate. And it's most of the time, at least in our family's experience, it's been really needed to pay for, you know, extra transportation to therapy. Specialized childcare has been a huge
formulas. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, special formula. Yes. Yeah. Gas to get out to those faraway specialist appointments. I mean, my kids have eaten right through it, in terms of like, I mean, they needed it. We needed every support they could get. And so I don't have a problem with kids with a higher level of need getting more support. I don't know that every kid always gets the level of support that they need. I think sometimes kids who need more support struggle to get it, and that sucks. But yeah, so treatment homes, the kids in treatment homes receive a higher level of financial support per month. I think the government definitely is thinking about that when they're making these decisions. And also, like I said, they have to pay the trainers. They have to, like money has to go into that to make that whole system run. So less training hours means less money spent on all that. And for the agencies too, like agencies are businesses, even ones that we really like. I really like my agency that we're with, but it's still a business. So, I'm sure they're all for it because the less training hours they need to do, the more money they can make as a profit.
Sure.
Sounds gross, but like it is gross. Agencies are businesses. I mean, that's the way that foster care works right now, is it's very, at least where I live, it's very agency based. And we could go into that another time. That's a whole episode. But, so yeah, I think those decisions to cut training hours in Ohio were made for maybe some not great reasons.
Yeah, I think I would agree. And I would hope that more people agree. But maybe it's an incentive for then people to become treatment homes. And, maybe in doing that, they'll realize how important the continuance of education is beyond just those minimum hours.
Well, and so we were talking about quality over quantity, and I think maybe people would be less resentful of the hours if they were revamped. And I mean,
Absolutely.
I have a lot of problems with the current situation with training. I mean, like for example, I rarely have a trainer who is a first parent or a parent who was involved with the system or a former addict or a former foster youth, like somebody who either as a parent or a child went through the system firsthand. I've had one training like that, and it was a parent who later got her kids reunified with her, and it was so amazing to hear from her. And I wish that most trainings had a purse for a purse person, a first person viewpoint like that. And I think it's a huge problem that that's not.
No, I agree. I mean, and I would even go as far to say, obviously we want to hear from the voices of adoptees and former foster youth, but I've never even had a class hosted by adoptive parents, or former foster parents or current foster parents. Mine have only been hosted by social workers.
And so our agency had one foster dad turned adoptive dad come and speak to the group, and I thought it was beneficial in some ways. I think a panel would have been more beneficial just because, like, you and I are big on differing opinions, and I think that's important. And so this guy was a really eloquent speaker and a great person, but I do think like certain things that he was saying, I definitely would have pushed back on if I was on a panel with him. So I think it would have been helpful to have more than one voice teaching these new people. Yeah, so I think that's a huge issue, is there's not a lot of people that have experienced the system from any lens involved in the trainings.
Exactly. And again, like I said, we definitely have, I think we have a preference on who we'd like to hear from, but currently we're not hearing from anybody who's involved. And the social workers that I have taken trainings by are like years and years out of being like ongoing workers.
Okay, so basically, we believe that hours for training should not be cut, and if anything, maybe even be increased a little bit, but ultimately quality over quantity, right?
Well, and I think that's why they probably, like, that's probably what was going through their heads, right? Is like, oh, we'll focus on quality rather than quantity. However, so far, I've not seen any like initiative to make that happen. I've not seen any advertisement for education classes that are hosted by former foster youth or by adoptees, or like I said, even foster parents, new and old. I've not seen any type of encouragement or new trainings put in place yet. And maybe it's a COVID thing, and I'm hopeful that I'm like wishing, maybe not hopeful. I'm smarter than that. But I would love to think that that's kind of what they're doing. But yeah, I think that that was probably the idea, right? I think we all would like quality over quantity. However, I haven't seen a shift in what's offered.
And I also, sadly, I think if that was part of the initiative, they maybe would have said something about it when they cut the hours. Like, and we're doing it because of this. And
Yeah, I agree.
yeah, the fun fact, I actually have done a training before for my agency, and I had a lot of fun. Guys, ask me again. Come on. But they did kind of give me a little stern wrist slap because at first everybody really liked it, but then they got some reviews that I swore too much during the training.
Oh, yes.
And yeah,
Because
so I was
I'm human.
like, you're shocked, I know. So it was a little embarrassing. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. So they sometimes will do foster parent led trainings at my agency.
We've got some exciting things coming up. The month of May is Foster Care Awareness Month. So what does that mean? Both for the
Okay.
podcast and for our lives.
Oh my God, so much. All right, so we're super pumped about the podcast because we have four episodes instead of two. So normally we're going to do every other week, we'll release an episode, but next month it'll be one every week because we think Foster Care Awareness Month is so important. We're also going to be releasing a video project that we worked on with our friends at Alicia's Closet, which is a local foster care nonprofit that helps foster families, reunified families, and kinship families with clothes and supplies for the kids in their care. And so I'm so excited about that. And we will just be working on making connections in the foster care community and elevating those voices that we think are so important. So adults who were kids in foster care, and also, parents who may have had connections with the system, or even, kinship caregivers, so relatives that have cared for their child relatives that have been in the system. And so that's what I love about Foster Care Awareness Month personally, is it's a chance to have an easier time finding those voices that are often overlooked, especially now that social media is a thing. There's hashtags and people have whole accounts that's their purpose, is to advocate for kids in care. So Foster Care Awareness Month kind of brings the problems in the foster care system to the forefront, and the experiences of the people affected by it into the light more. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I do want to know, Lauren, what are your personal feelings on Foster Care Awareness Month, and what are our plans to do our part to improve it?
Okay, so I have a lot of personal feelings on this, and they've evolved over time. So, Ronald Reagan, the old that like weird, basically like vintage Trump, I feel like the celebrity president, he created this month in, oh my gosh, 1988, and the initial purpose was to like spread gratitude for foster parents, and I just think that's fucking disgusting, to be honest. And I know it's like, oh God, I know people don't always agree with me on this, but like, so I became a mom through foster care first. So my thing is, like, yes, moms and dads, we haul ass, and it's a hard job being a parent, no matter how you slice it or what route you took. But I think it's very important that foster parents aren't seen as like saviors or saints. Like, it's just gross because I hate when people act like I'm doing charity work by loving my kids. It's very insulting to my kids
Sure.
because it's like, oh, those poor kids, like they're so this and that, like she's so awesome for being their parent, like no. And so I don't love the idea of Foster Care Awareness Month having just the purpose of thanking foster parents. And my agency like gives us little presents during the month of May, and I think it's kind of, I don't know, like it's a little meh. I don't love it because it's like, I don't need a present. My kids are a huge gift in my life already. So I think that I have a little bit of a problem with that. And I think that there's a lot more foster parent voices that get elevated during Foster Care Awareness Month than former foster youth do. And I think that's a huge, huge issue. That's a huge issue because we're not the experts on this. I mean, I didn't live through foster care. I don't know what that's like, and I shouldn't be the first person people go to learn from. I mean, I think foster parents have valuable things to share. I mean, obviously I'm over here making a fucking podcast with you about it, but I don't think that we're the first person that you should be learning from. I think that former foster youth that have actually been through it should be considered the experts. And it sucks that they're not right now, or they're not recognized as that as much as I would like. So I think that needs to change. And then parents that were, you know, whose kids were in the system, I think that's, I mean, there are some parents out there sharing, and I think that they get a lot of pushback, and it's also a lot of criticism and stigma. And I think that's an issue. You know, I think more of them would share if society in general was more supportive and kinder to parents who are sharing about an experience like being stuck in addiction or having their kids taken. But those voices are out there too. So I think that former foster youth and parents that were involved with the system need to be heard more during the month of May.
No. So, I mean, let me just start off by saying, like, I agree. Lauren and I have very similar feelings about this. However, I do try and, I don't know, do my best to put in effort and be understanding of all sides. And so I think that my hope, and again, like, this may be like a very, my hopes of what it would be rather than like how it's actually executed.
You try to see both sides to things.
Yeah, I think that, and again, maybe this is just my like fantasy, what I hope, and how I hope it would be executed. But I do think that, and I'll be the first to say I hate recognition, because I'm not doing this for myself. I'm not doing this to like hear you're doing a good job. It makes me uncomfortable when people are like, oh, you're such a hero. Oh, you're like, you're changing these kids' lives.
I just thought of something. I'm not trying to interrupt, but I just thought of something. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's more like, because I've noticed, like, I feel like you're more appreciative of encouragement, and me too. Like, I don't want recognition, but I'll take encouragement.
Yeah, I do need that. I completely, yes. I would say that that is a great way to describe my feelings. I think that Foster Care Awareness Month to me is a great opportunity for foster parents to remind each other, like, this shit is hard. And while we're not noble or saviors, I'm not, you know, I don't know, like, I'm not doing this for anybody's benefit other than just to, like, make some kids' lives easier in a really shitty time. But I think that to me, Foster Care Awareness Month is a time to like have some solidarity as foster parents, because it is a unique way of parenthood. Like, it's not the same as biological children. Like, you're fostering the lives of children who have, you know, experienced such immense trauma, and you know, sometimes it's worse than others, and sometimes it's it looks different, because again, like, I have kids who, you know, the reunification plan didn't work out. And I have some who really just need a moment of support until things can be figured out. And so it's just such a strange take on parenthood, that I think sometimes it's really cool to have the solidarity of, to be like, you know, we're still parents. We're all just trying our best. And I think that especially now with social media, it's such an opportunity to elevate the voices that we should be learning from and sharing that amongst each other. Because again, a lot of my connections have been through word of mouth, where, you know, I find some like people in support groups or friends. And I think that like I've learned a lot from you, where we guide each other to like appropriate lanes of education. While I completely agree, nobody needs a pat on the back. Basically, what I'm just trying to say is that this route of parenting is unique and difficult, not to minimize, you know, parenting biological children, but it's very, very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I basically like, I want to elevate the voices of people who have experienced the system from a less privileged place. But I also want to hear from foster parents. I want to share as a foster parent, because ultimately I do want more people to do this. And that's the other thing, is if no foster parents share, then this world is kind of hidden. And I don't want that either, because I want people who may not have considered it before, but who could be really good at it, to know that they can be a foster parent too. So I think that's a big goal of mine during Foster Care Awareness Month also, is to, you know, encourage people that would be really great at this to make it a part of their lives.
I agree. I think that, you know, something that just kind of hit me, and again, I know that we are, we're aiming to use the verbiage of children in care, but the title of the month is not Foster Child Awareness Month. And so it's not a time to, you know, speak about cases or kids, or I don't even necessarily think it's specific to kids' experiences, but at the same time, it's not Foster Parent Awareness Month either. And so I think that if we take it for its name, Foster Care Awareness Month, what we should be doing is sharing what the foster care system looks like, how it's affecting kids currently, how it can be improved, and showing people who may be considering it, that there is support. You know, it's, we've got a team, right? So we like, there's a team of foster parents that I think that would be what I would want to emphasize, is that here are the current problems. Here are some ways we're trying to, you know, ratify these gross situations. And we're doing it together.
Right. And like, come join the team. Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to be talking about in May, because I'm really excited for our May topics.
Yeah. Well, do we want to talk about like our topics for each week?
I think so. Yeah. So we'll be ranting about a lot of hot topics, like why we hate the term foster to adopt. Yes, I don't like it. I don't want to hear your excuses. I don't want to hear your but it's okay if. No.
And it's totally, I think, okay to be like off-put by that, because even I, who is not somebody who entered foster care for adoption, was kind of like, what the hell are you talking about, Lauren? But
you know, when I first brought it up, you were like, wait, why can't we say that? Here's why. Yeah,
exactly. We'll also be discussing mommy issues and the effects of foster care on your other kids. For me, it's biological. For Lauren, it's your adoptees.
Oh, and we'll be talking about why we believe in radical reunification. So like what that is and how it looks in a practical application.
Yeah. And I think we'll also be doing our best to make a lot of references to people who are using their voice to educate from the privileged voices as well. Because again, I think that while it is not their responsibility to educate us, there are some awesome ones who have chosen to.
That's such a good way to put it. Like former foster youth are not, they do not have to educate people that are choosing to be foster parents. That's a very important point. But yeah, like some of them choose to, and they are awesome, and they are the real experts.
Yeah. So also, I think we find ourselves here at the end of the podcast, where, you know, we try to share resources with you from Privileged Voices. I think we have an exciting one. We're kind of ending our intro month with a cool one, and then we'll have some really awesome ones rolling into the month of May as well.
Yes. So our Privileged Voice that we want you guys to support and listen to and learn from for this episode is Carlos Dillard. So that's K-A-R-L-O-S-D-I-L-L-A-R-D. And his social media stuff will be included in the show notes or the episode description and on our social media. He is a cool person in many ways. He's involved in fashion. He is a former foster youth. He's a proud gay man, which is, I wouldn't normally lead with that, but it's something that he's very open with on his platforms. And he's an advocate for LGBTQ youth. And he also has a program that packs suitcases called SOS Suitcases, packs necessity bags for kids coming into foster care. And he also has a memoir out about his experience in foster care. I haven't actually read the memoir yet. I'm really looking forward to it, though. It's definitely on my list. And I think Carlos is a really cool, really outspoken advocate in the community. And most importantly, you know, he lived through this shit. So I think that we can learn a lot from him.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm excited to read his memoir as well, and kind of, you know, hopefully we can even make some mentions on the podcast of things that we learn. Maybe even we can read it with some people and kind of discuss it. That would be really cool. We'll have to.
Oh my God. Somebody was just mentioning that on Instagram. We'll have to have a chat after the chat, but I definitely want to do a book club.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome.
It'd be really fun.
But yeah. You want
to
add it?
We're excited to see. We won't be seeing them. We're excited to chat with you guys. We're excited to have a one-sided conversation with you in May.
Yes, I think so. Okay, send us off, Lauren.
Send us off. No. Bye.